Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the humans behind the commits. I'm here today with Mike Herschel, who is a co-founder of something called Dripyard and a longtime member and developer in the Drupal community. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I think we can start by asking, what is a Dripyard?
That's a good question. There's a whole bunch of background. like the TLDR of Dripyard is we sell premium Drupal themes that don't suck. So Drupal in the past, like, it really never had a robust theme ecosystem like WordPress or Webflow or any of the other competitors have. And part of that reason is just because within Drupal, the theme is so separated from like the rest of the system, it would never have any idea what the markup is. So like a Drupal developer would go in and create, you know, their views, which are kind of like the smart list, like the loop type stuff. But the theme could never predict what the DOM structure was and what the CSS classes is. So it could never, you can never theme against that. And that recently all changed. Drupal now has a concept of components. We have like a thing called single directory components where you have a theme can ship a whole library of components as, you know, the markup, the schema of what type of data it has, and, you know, JavaScript and CSS. So our company is now shipping themes that, you know, have a whole library of components. You can wire your data directly in there, you know, through the UI or through code. But yeah, that's basically the gist of it.
So I'm a WordPress dude, and I think a lot of this is going to be, we do this in WordPress, and how does this work in Drupal? And it's funny because I was at Badcamp last month. It was my first Badcamp, which is Bay Area Drupal Camp. And I was doing that thing. I was being that person, the voice of why is WordPress do this for the Drupal folks there. So I will definitely empathize putting you in this position, having just been in that position from the other side. But talk a little bit more about you mentioned that there's like specifically technical limitations of the way that themes sort of existed in Drupal in the past that sort of prevented the existence or, I guess, feasibility of something like a marketplace. From a dev perspective, somebody like I have a history of like building WordPress themes, and actually I had a site for a while where I was attempting to sell WordPress themes. What is the sticking point? What are the sticking points that prevented that from being really doable in Drupal from like a in the weeds kind of direction?
Yeah. So if you want to get down into the weeds, like Drupal, of course, has been around for a very long time. And like, so within Drupal, you go into your admin forum or your admin side and you create what's called content types, which are the same thing as post types, you know, and they're all fieldable. They're all kind of, and then we have another like module that's integrated into Drupal called views, and you create basic listing of items. You can create filters and smarts. Mm-hmm. It's really powerful. You can do a heck of a lot of stuff with it. But as you do that, as you create these content types, as you create these fields within the content types, as you create these views, Drupal will add markup. You know, it'll add like a thing like it'll, like with Drupal, a piece of content is called a node. Mm-hmm. And so it'll add like a default CSS class on there called like node --, you know, episode or something if you're doing a podcast website. Sure. But when you're trying to sell a theme, you know, you're trying to sell a theme that can work with a whole bunch of things. And the theme doesn't have this functionality. Themes cannot contain content types. They can't contain views. Mm-hmm. So you can ship a theme, but you don't know that CSS class is going to be node --episode.
Sure.
And you also don't know, you know, what the HTML structure is underneath, you know? And so that made things pretty, you know, almost impossible for a robust theme ecosystem. And there's companies out there that do sell Drupal themes. You'll see them on ThemeForest and stuff like that. the themes that are sold, like they kind of get around that by shipping a custom module with themes. And so the custom module might install some content types, you know, might have some views and stuff like that. But as soon as you go away from where that custom or where that custom module points you to, everything falls apart because the theme can't handle that.
Right.
And so that's the difference, you know. And yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah. So, like, fundamentally, I guess sort of quasi equivalent, although I think you could still probably build a theme that was open enough in WordPress to support this too. But like the idea of like I'm doing like I we were talking before we start hit record is like this website has a custom post type called episodes. And if like WordPress didn't understand and didn't like already like have some like base classes and whatever that just the themes expect to use or you know that are general enough, then the idea is that because the theme doesn't necessarily know about the existence of the episode post type, it would and because Drupal specifically is kind of architected from the perspective of like we're letting you tell us what types of content you're using on your site, then it's like the theme is like, well, like I don't know what you're doing, so it can't really fill in those gaps as easily is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and the theme can maybe do like some default styling, you
Sure.
know, put some spacing around stuff, but you know, and like me, like I the default theme in Drupal is called Olivero. Like when you install Drupal, that's what you get. And I was the primary dev on that. And so we had to basically try to accommodate everything without the ability to accommodate everything,
Sure.
you know, but with the introduction of components, you know, so now, like as a theme developer, I can ship a library, you know, 50, 60 components or more. And let's say I want to create an episode, you know, content type or post type or whatever. At that point, you know, I can kind of drag in, you know, a title component, you know, map that to the, you know, my title field. I can drag in, you know, same thing with a body field or, you know, a video field and, you know, potentially, you know, MP3, like an audio player and stuff like that.
Right.
And
Yep.
so now it comes a lot more flexible, which is pretty neat.
And I have been watching what's been going on in Drupal land.
Yeah.
This is sort of a one might suggest a fortuitous time for the existence or emergence of a theme development shop,
Yeah.
given that Dries Boitart, the founder of Drupal, has been talking a lot about marketplaces and selling Drupal stuff. Talk about that relationship and what your thoughts are about sort of a commercial ecosystem for Drupal.
Yeah, so like for the longest time, when I say for the longest time, maybe like for the past 10 years, Drupal really concentrated on like the enterprise. You know, we were like, all right, let's just put all our time and effort into tracking down these Fortune 500 companies and try to get these million-dollar contracts. And you know, that would work for the for like the larger companies. But at the same time, the unintended consequence of that is that Drupal's market share started to decline. And when the market share declines, that means that there are less Drupal developers. There are less people, you know, in that mid market kind of learning Drupal, knowing what Drupal is. And that has hurt Drupal, you know. And so eventually the powers that be, the leadership within Drupal said, like, all right, well, we need to recapture this mid market. And so they put together this huge strategy, and this is up on Dries's, he has a blog somewhere called Starshot Product Strategy. Starshot was the code name for Drupal CMS before it was called Drupal CMS. And so basically the goal is to for Drupal to become feasible of like being a CMS chosen for a website, you know, that has like maybe a budget of like $10,000 to $30,000 or something like that, which right now, unless you're a Drupal developer, you probably don't want to do that because you know Drupal can be a little expensive. So as part of that, they decided, all right, well, we're going to create this kind of like, I call it like an easy button for Drupal, you know, and called Drupal CMS. And it has like all the modules that you have to download pre-configured, you know, because there's like some modules that should totally be part of Drupal core, things like, you know, like the friendly paths, you know, so if you create a piece of content, it's not node/1, it's like, you know, whatever, you know, it automatically gets that node title in there and stuff for SEO. So it has all this stuff pre-configured and it's pretty nice. But there's still a couple missing pieces in there. One of the missing pieces is like a decent page builder. Like Drupal has this whole ecosystem of page builders because no one has specifically like taken over. Mm-hmm. And honestly, this is something that's like kind of hurt Drupal. You know, you can kind of do anything in Drupal, but it shouldn't be this much effort. You know, WordPress has Gutenberg, Webflow has whatever the hell Webflow has, mm-hmm. et cetera, you know? And so there's a, their Acquia, which is kind of like the largest Drupal company and the one that Dries founded, is creating a next generation page builder called Drupal Canvas. And Drupal Canvas does everything that you should pretty much, you know, you would assume it would do, you know, and it does a few extra things too, which is pretty cool. So you can like copy and paste components, group components, create what's called like patterns, you know, edit them, you know, you can map your data to it. It's pretty cool. So at that point we have, you know, once Drupal Canvas comes out, which will probably be next month, and then, you know, we have, then Drupal CMS 2.0 will be released. So at that point we have like a pretty good starting point. But we still need to like kind of put everything together to compete with WordPress, to compete with Webflow, Wix, Squarespace, you know, and all Contentful and all those headless CMSs. So at that point, you know, the Drupal Association of Powers That Be said, like we need this ecosystem. We want to do something called site templates. And site templates are basically like, it's a theme, it's a Drupal theme, but also like pre-configured with those content types, you know, which are similar to post types, you know, it can come pre-configured with modules, and it can also come pre-configured with default content, you know? So an example of this is like, let's say I'm a church and I want to, you know, I want a churchy website, you know, and
I built a couple of those.
Yeah, yeah. I would hypothetically be able to browse this marketplace, look for a site template that like, you know, it would have maybe have a list of content types. You know, you may have like sermons, you know, events and mm-hmm. blog, all that good stuff. And at that point, pull it down, install it. And at that point, you would number one have all, you would have content, so you can just edit your content. And then you would have a beautiful theme, hopefully, and everything pre-configured. So but at that point, like what's really cool is you have that flexibility of Drupal now. Like Drupal is hyper flexible. Drupal can build like so many things if you have, you know, if you kind of know your way around it. Like Drupal's freaking amazing. So that's kind of where we're going with that. And to get started, we're like, The marketplace is set to kick off like right around DrupalCon Chicago, which is going to be in March. And it's going to be kind of like almost like a beta, you know, like we're going to be there. We're going to have a couple site templates. There's going to be 15 or 16 other companies that have some site templates. We don't know what we're going to build yet, or at least I don't know what we're going to build. Mm-hmm. But all our stuff is going to work. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be super accessible. And hopefully people will buy it. You know, and if they buy it, well, that's good. Like I can tell you, like I've been to a number of WordCamps. I've been to like WordCamp Miami and Jacksonville, probably one or two others. And the amount of money in the WordPress ecosystem is like significantly more than in the Drupal ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because of the robust commercial ecosystem around WordPress. You know, you have, you know, however many theme vendors, you got all these plugin vendors, you know, and stuff like that, and they're all advertising. And the thing about that is like, that's why, you know, WordCamp US can cost like $50 or something like that, because, you know, they get, is it $50 or is it just a couple hundred? Yeah.
It's I think I want to say this last year it was $50 a day. I have honestly paid less attention to WordCamp prices because my company pays for them, so like I never even look at like the ticket price. But yeah, I think it was $50 a day. So if you're going to WordCamp US, it would be $100, I think.
Yeah, so that's like
But
ridiculously cheap, and
that's
then
super
like,
cheap as compared to DrupalCon, which is like a 1K basically.
and DrupalCon is lowering their prices, FYI. Like DrupalCon Chicago, like the prices are going to start at like at 500, just because we're kind of realizing we're pricing people out, you know, especially like a lot of the smaller companies like Dripyard, you know, like to drop a couple grand going there, you know, that's a little more significant than if you're like Pantheon or Acquia or, you know, automatic or something like that, you know.
You're hitting on all of my like key touch points about things in the WordPress ecosystem. Like there's just so many crossovers. So one of the things, okay, so a foundational, I'll start here. A foundational part of this podcast specifically came out of a sticker that I got from DrupalCon, which is right here, because I was at DrupalCon last year. Come for the code, stay for the community. And that resonated with me. Because that's the reason why I was in the WordPress community. And ultimately that became one of the foundations for how I wanted to do this show. And one of the things that I learned when I was in Atlanta, that is distinct about the Drupal community from the WordPress developer ecosystem is that in Drupal, more frequently, if we both have tools or modules or whatever that serve a similar purpose, that we're probably more likely to be like, hey, let's join forces and make the best thing. So like if I have an SEO plugin and you have an SEO plugin, then we might work together and be like, well, let's make one of these things the de facto SEO plugin and make it the best plugin or module. Whereas in the WordPress ecosystem, if I have an SEO plugin and you have an SEO plugin, I'm probably not going to talk to you because that's my IP and I might turn around and sell it. So I had a lot of conversations at DrupalCon about this, but also about the idea of a marketplace because that was sort of when Dries started floating the idea. And my reaction as someone in the WordPress ecosystem is I really like that model of being collaborative and sharing and like, you know, joining these two things instead of like really going head to head and competing. What is your take on sort of like because in WordPress we're more likely to be competitors and not sharing those ideas and being sort of siloing yourselves off. So what is your take on that sort of dynamic in terms of like do you see that as something that could be a risk to like the Drupal like developer ecosystem as things get a little bit more competitive?
Yeah, things are always a risk, right? Like as soon as you make big changes like this, and these are some of the biggest changes in the Drupal ecosystem ever, you know, there's always a risk. So like to expand on your point, like I saw a blog post at one point that like WordPress had like, I don't know, 100 and something form builders, you know, that you can buy, and they won't play nice with each other.
No.
And then like furthermore, like if you have WordPress and you install like, you know, 14, 15 plugins, you're kind of your site's like a little funky, or you're
Can
probably
be.
fighting. You can be fighting some bugs and stuff like that. Like one of the cool things is with Drupal is like all the modules play well together. Like Drupal has a very robust set of APIs, you know, and that's something that we do better than WordPress. WordPress does a lot of better a lot of things better than Drupal, but one thing we have is like a robust APIs that allow things to work together. So if you have like 60, 70 modules installed on a Drupal site, it like that's normal. You know, if you have a couple hundred, that's fine too. And so like going into like Drupal has probably like three or four page builders, but there's one like big one. It's called Webform. You know, it's easy. And built around Webform, there's ecosystems that build on top of that. So like you know, you'll have Webform Commerce, Webform this, Webform that allow you to do like, you know, little things. And it's just really nice. You don't have to evaluate. You don't know. You don't got to pay, you know, $20, $40 or whatever for something like that. You just try it, you get it to work, and everything goes. So like that's one of the advantages that Drupal has, and that's something that I think the leadership recognizes. Dries had stated modules will always be GPL forever free, and it's the themes that that could be commercial code. So back when I was like back when I was like researching like doing a little bit of due diligence, like can I do Dripyard, so I started looking into GPL and like everything, because GPL, for those who don't know, has a very sticky license, where like if you write PHP that builds on top of Drupal or WordPress and then distribute it, it's technically GPL, which means it's free. And but that doesn't necessarily apply to things that it's a little bit of legalese, but like things that are not directly interfacing with that. So things that can run in the browser, things like CSS and JavaScript, will not necessarily be GPL. And I did a little bit of digging, and there's a Drupal licensing working group, and there was some talk about that. And the conclusion that I saw within this issue is, like CSS and JavaScript is not necessarily GPL. So at that point, I was like, all right, well, we can do this. We can just kind of, have our CSS and everything closed source. So the TLDR of all of this is that, like, it's kind of like a fine line, like you can't like it's not necessarily a good idea for everything to cost money, and then people don't collaborate, but at the same time, you need money because people need to get paid. Like, I am doing this because, to tell you the truth, like I want to be able to make six figures and work 20 hours a week. That is my dream, and yeah, so it's going to be a fine line. I have a feeling that like as we as Drupal continues to like continue down this path, there are going to be changes, and people are going to figure things out. People like Drupal's going to make mistakes, and they're going to say like, all right, well, let's back this up a little bit, or maybe we should go forward a little bit more. Maybe we're not doing this enough. So I think it's going to be trial and error.
That's interesting about about modules being different and like the marketplace not being handled or not covering modules necessarily versus themes, and themes being the thing that we're talking about first. I think that makes a lot of sense, both from sort of Drupal's history, but also like creating, like not shutting off that sort of collaborations, which I do recognize I think happens a lot more in modules, because like you said, like you can have dependency modules and whatever, and like this module calls these other three modules and whatever, and you do need to have sort of like keep that ecosystem. In WordPress, there is kind of sort of an equivalent. There are like plugins that are like add-ons or additional functionality to an existing plugin, and maybe that existing plugin is a premium plugin, or maybe it's like a free plugin and the extension is a premium thing or whatever. Like there's all sorts of like weird things like that. But yeah, I think that that's interesting. Do you see a future where there might be also a module marketplace, both like, besides Drupal.org and getting your stuff like normally that way, but like having like a like the equivalent of like an Envato sort of thing where you could like purchase and integrate like premium modules for Drupal?
I would be really, really surprised. There are like some modules that like kind of do the whole GPL loophole and put some processing on the server. That's kind of how they do it. So there's things like that. I can't see any Envato type marketplace for modules. I think if that happened, people would kind of get pissed and
Interesting.
then just like download it and throw it up on Drupal.org or GitHub or something like that, which has happened in the past,
It happens in WordPress too.
And it's interesting, like it's an interesting topic, right? So if I sell a site template, let's say I sell this for like $1,000 and I have my theme and also like has, a composer file that references a bunch of modules. These modules are key components to this site template. Well, I'm making all the profit of that. these module maintainers aren't making shit, you know. Don't know if I can say that word, but I just did. But
I'll flag the explicit tag. It's not a problem.
Yeah. You know, and that but that also goes all the way down, you know, like, well, at that point, the core maintainers and the core developers are not getting paid, you know, the Apache developers or Nginx. And also, like, the argument would be that, well, these module maintainers and developers have been doing kind of unpaid labor for years and years while other people are making money. You have agencies, you know, like agencies. I used to work for a company called Lullabot, and they would put together these great websites for these large companies for multi-million dollar contracts. And, you know, does that money go toward those module developers? Right. No, I mean, to be fair, there are some, that, there's a number that would work at that company, but still, you know, so it's a really interesting ecosystem. Like, open source is really interesting, and how that works and how that can work. So
yeah. I'm interested. So one of the things that happens a lot in the WordPress commercial ecosystem is that even though technically, because Matt Mullenweg has explicitly stated a number of times that he believes that all code in plugins and themes should be GPL licensed or GPL compatible, even when it doesn't have to be, because that's the spirit of the GPL, not necessarily the letter, you know. So he doesn't like things like Envato where they have mixed licenses or whatever. He's much more like everything should be GPL. And if everything is GPL, then that means anybody can take your code and then republish it and put it somewhere else, and now it's their code, because that's what the GPL allows you to do, is basically redistribute it as is. So the thing that most premium WordPress plugins and themes sort of do is, okay, what you're paying for is access to updates. So they have a different update mechanism, so it's not going to be on like WordPress.org and get automatic updates that way. It's going to be through their own sort of homebrewed update mechanism. And two, they're also selling support for a contracted period of time. Is that sort of the model that you are thinking of for Dripyard as well? Are you thinking that primarily you are selling the proprietary like JavaScript and CSS? I mean, you know, like, That is the thing that is being sold, even if it's like you're selling it with a bunch of other stuff that is technically GPL compatible.
So, like, we're definitely like selling support add-ons, you know, reoccurring, and that's like $100 a year. So that's not a heck of a lot of money. Updates, you know, people will download a zip file from our, you know, when they log in, get their theme and stuff like that, and then they can, you know, download their updates that way, and, you know, hopefully their changes will be in a sub theme so they don't get clobbered. But like, it's like, I can't really, but it's going to be interesting to see how things go. I can't really tell you. I can tell you what we're doing, but I can't tell you what everyone else is doing. Like, I don't know if that really answers your question or not. But
I was wondering from the perspective of Dripyard specifically. Yeah. So it sounds like that you'd like kind of, and that's one of the things too. Like, if you're gating access to the files, because you have to be a logged in user and you have to pay to get the login in the first place, then that's an easy way of making sure that people are paying for your stuff.
Yeah, we're doing that. And there's like, to tell you the truth, there's like nothing stopping people, you know, from redistributing our stuff after they purchase it. You know, like we could sue them, but, you know, but we sell our themes for $500, you know. You know, more than likely, what we'll end up, I'll end up like spilling something on them at DrupalCon or something. But like, you know, but at the same time, you know, like our thought process is, well, if you're starting a a project with Drupal, you're probably spending significantly more than $10,000 to spend like $500 on a theme, add in some support seems pretty reasonable. And honestly, like these themes that we developed over 10 months, and I'm like probably thousands of hours, and they're really good. They're awesome. And it's going to save people tens of thousands of dollars, by using these. So.
So what I we've talked a lot about Drupal and we've talked a lot about WordPress. What I
Yeah.
often like to do is to really talk about sort of what your journey to tech or web development was sort of like in the first place. Like, how did
Oh
you
yeah.
get to be how did you get to be Mike Herschel, co-founder of Dripyard? Like, what led to you just getting involved in this stuff in the first place?
So I was born at a very young age. I got into computers back in like 1999. I used to do technical support for Dell and Gateway computers before they like shipped off all that stuff over to India, so I would talk to your grandmother trying to troubleshoot Windows 98. I moved up to Gainesville, and I got this job doing technical support over the phone, technical support, just because like I had done that before. And it was this enterprise software company called Bar Systems that like would interface between like mainframes and like regular networks and stuff. And it was so slow that we would just sit there and twiddle our thumbs. And the guy in the office next to me, he was doing these websites, and he was using Macromedia Fireworks, and showed me how to do that. And I had to use Photoshop. This would have been like 2001, 2002. And I would literally like do all my designs in Fireworks. We both would, and then we would slice it up, and we would just export it. And it was literally like a table full of images that would be your
I
website.
remember those. Yep, that was
Yeah,
awful. I hate those.
I found some of those on my old hard drive, and I have some of those up in my GitHub. Like, if you have some links or something like show notes or something, I'll shoot you some links. You can see
Yeah, for sure.
spacer GIFs and stuff in there.
Yeah.
So I got into websites, and I started doing like my brother's band's website. I did it at my brother's friend's band's websites, and I started doing websites as a side hustle and stuff like that. I remember I would put these ads on Craigslist for barter to do websites for like to have people do stuff for our house, and I ended up getting this guy who was a starting a lawn care company, and we became friends. You put in a sprinkler system, and he said he had this website called or he had a domain name called GatorTailgating.com. And I'm a big Florida Gator football fan, and I was like, I like tailgating. I'm like, let's do this, So I started looking for CMSs. This would have been 2007. And I don't know why I didn't look at WordPress, but I looked at Joomla and I looked at Drupal, and I chose Drupal, to be honest, because it had an integrated forum, which is like such a funny thing to select. But then I kind of got into it, and around, and I started doing like a little bit of freelance in Drupal. I would just literally like do everything the wrong way, like edit the files in core, which you're not supposed to do, et cetera, et cetera. And I eventually made my way. Like I remember, I Googled, Gainesville Drupal just to see if there was what would ha happen, And I found this thing on groups.drupal.org that led me to Florida Drupal Camp, and I went down there in early 2010, and I was kind of hooked on the. I was like, holy shit! I didn't know that there was actually a community. I thought it was just like a bunch of nerds developing this, and they taught me how to do stuff that I didn't know how to do. I went home, and I was like so enthusiastic, Ended up going the next few years and started volunteering and stuff. And I started looking for Drupal jobs at that point. I was working for the Florida High School Athletic Association at the time, just doing like all their computer stuff. And I migrated their like fairly large website to Drupal 6 at the time. And then I ended up kind of getting more involved with Florida Drupal Camp. I ended up getting my job at Lullabot back in 2014, and kind of just went head on into Drupal at that point, if I wasn't already there. And I ended up getting involved in Drupal core development at Lullabot, where I I kind of got roped into leading a team to do a new theme for Drupal, where the previous theme for Drupal just had been around for so long. You know, at the time it was probably like 10 years old, which is like a million in internet years, you know. And so went through that, and everybody was really happy, and you know, ended up doing a bunch of other cool stuff, you know. And then ended up quitting Lullabot for more money, you know, and then quitting that job for more money. And I'm getting laid off, and that, you know, and then I was like, you know, that led me to here. And I was like, because I had been mulling this company for a while, and I was even talking to other developers while I was still like, you know, in various different jobs about potentially starting this with them. And then I was like, this is going to be it. I just got laid off. This is going to be my kick in the ass. I'm gonna start this up. And you know, so I reached out to my current business partner, this guy named Andy Giles, who lives in Asheville, North Carolina, and he's an amazing back end dev. He's a horrible front end dev, and but he's also like really good at things like DevOps and e-commerce, and he's a nice guy, you know. And we ended up talking him into it. I said, we're gonna get rich. We're gonna have, you know, all this type of stuff. And you know, you know, we. Like money-wise, we had to invest in some designers, you know. So we ended up we at this point we both probably threw in about like 5 grand into the business to pay for some designs, you know, and just a heck of a lot of work. Ended up taking the equity line of credit against my house, so I had something to live off of, and ended up just like spending. I thought we were gonna have this first theme out in like 3 months. It took like 10 months because it's funny how much work goes into making sure your themes can support like almost anything that the kitchen sink, you know. But now we have this whole design system. We have a system behind everything, so it's really easy to kind of turn around new themes at this point. But what we're I guess that answers your question, but I guess where I'm going with this is like currently we're kind of working on making sure we have full support for Drupal Canvas, which is that next gen page builder that's going to come out in about a month.
Yeah,
Oh,
tell me
yeah.
about so I've been sort of watching the evolution of Drupal CMS since well, I guess since January this year pretty
Yeah.
much. And like I went back before I went to DrupalCon in Atlanta. I went back and I watched Dries's like last two keynotes before that. And I watched the one from Vienna this last couple weeks. And I remember when I was in Atlanta and he was showing what was then referred to as Experience Builder, which is now Drupal Canvas. I was like, I tweeted, actually, I guess it's not tweeting if you do it on Blue Sky. It's like Bloot, I don't know. I posted on Blue Sky that this looks like the thing that Gutenberg should have been all along. I was like so incredibly impressed by what looked to be like way more intuitive, way easier to use. And I've played with and installed Drupal CMS, and I fully believe, in fact, I wrote a blog post on the Pantheon blog about this. I fully believe that that is like 1,000 times better experience, first time user experience for installing a CMS than WordPress. And part of that has to do with like it's more of like a guided install. It's asking you questions, but also it's asking you like what type of site you want to create. And most like every other CMS I've ever installed just gives you a bunch of form fields. And it doesn't ask you the question, what are you trying to build? And so because of that, you never ask the question of yourself, what type of website are you trying to build? You're just kind of like, oh, well, I'm just gonna click a couple buttons and then I have a website and then I'm just gonna do stuff, right? Like, but you never actually have to intentionally like come up with like, no, what am I actually trying to create? And I thought that was a really good like just slow down and like make the process a little bit more user friendly. And then also when it installs, like I feel like like the user interface, which in the past, for me as somebody who is more familiar with WordPress, the user interface in the Drupal admin is very complex and hard for me to navigate and know where all the stuff is. And it feels better, and maybe it's just because it looks more like the WordPress admin, I don't know. But it feels better for me to like in the Drupal CMS admin. I don't know, maybe just because stuff is on the left, I guess. But like it feels like it's easier for me to navigate. So I guess my question is like, somewhere in here is the question, I think, which is like, where do you see, like, do you believe that capturing the sort of mid-market or that first-time user experience will be like the changing point for driving more Drupal adoption?
I mean, I would say definitely, you know, like there's a lot more mid-market than enterprise market, sure. You know, and honestly, to tell you the truth, like the enterprise people want the same crap as the mid-market people for the most part. You know, they want to be able to assemble pages without having to like, you know, have a postdoctorate or something like that, you know. I don't know if you're familiar with like Adobe Enterprise
You know, builder,
Manager, like they have like nice drag and drop stuff, but they don't do what Drupal does, you know. And but they end up selling their product based on like showing that drag and drop stuff to the marketers, and the marketers, you know, get super excited about that because it's pretty sexy, you know. If we can match that and surpass it, which I believe we will, like that's going to be a big deal, you know. And the same thing with like Gutenberg, like Canvas is built by looking at the lessons from everything, you know, from things like Gutenberg and AEM and almost every other page builder out there. They were all evaluated as these technical requirements started coming in for Drupal Canvas.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing that I really like, I've done like a little bit of Gutenberg development under Drupal because there is a Gutenberg module for Drupal.
Yep.
But like one thing that I really disliked about Gutenberg is you have to have like almost two versions of your markup. You know, you have to have the one that appears in the editor and the one that appears, you know, on the homepage and stuff. And like, that's something that, you know, like, well, Drupal Canvas, like right now I'm in the process of, you know, making sure all of our components work well. And there's some funky things I'm having to kind of work through, but, you know, all this is kind of normal. But like, I add like an additional setting, like a prop or, you know, a slot, and it just shows, it's just like nice. Mm-hmm. And it, like the developer experience is getting right up there. And then like coming from previous Drupal page builders, which honestly a lot of them are like really kind of rough unless you did a lot of manual work. Like you can make these page builders awesome, but that requires, you know, a person who knows what they're doing to install a bunch of modules and configure them just so, you know. But just like right out of the box, it's just like nice. You start dragging stuff, you start copying and pasting stuff, everything it updates on the fly. There's a nice preview button. There's all these things that just like feel like very intuitive. So it's nice. And there's still like a little rough edges. Like I go in there and I'm filing bugs, you know, like I find stuff and I'm filing bugs because it's not stable yet. But it's like head and shoulders above, you know, anything else that Drupal's done before. And like as far like I like it better than Gutenberg too, although Gutenberg, to tell you the truth, like it's going to be interesting to see how that works out, you know.
Yeah, so I've been in the last year or so been playing a lot more. So as Gutenberg has developed in the WordPress ecosystem, it's extended to be more than just like the block editor in content stuff. It's been expanded to do more site editing things. The site that this podcast is the website, the Community and Code website, is just a 2025 like default theme. and a bunch of customizations in the full site editor to change the different layouts for the different pages and the episodes and whatever. So I can do a lot of stuff just using the tools that are core without having to build like a theme at all or even think about that anymore, which is pretty impressive. Like it didn't used to be like that. But it took a long time to get to that point. And for a long time it was like there's a lot of things that you're like a lot of limitations that you that I was like running up against and like, oh, I don't know how to do this thing or how you were like I just need to change a line of CSS to fix this other problem, whatever. And it took a lot to get to the point where it is now. But it does seem like, I mean, demos aren't live a lot. And so like the proof is in the pudding when you actually start to use it. But what I've seen of Drupal Canvas, it feels like it's a better like it's further along that timeline to a usable thing than a lot of the stuff that has been in WordPress core for the last couple years and then iterated on to get to the point where it is now.
Yeah, I can't really speak to like like when I don't know WordPress nearly as well as you, and I haven't used it recently, so I can't like really speak to how it feels compared to modern Gutenberg. Most of my Gutenberg experience comes within the context of Drupal, which is not the correct
It's a specific
experience.
flavor, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I can tell you that like there are some things in Drupal Canvas that like need to be worked on, and I've been filing bugs and pinging the appropriate people in Slack, which I'm pretty sure they're probably oh crap, here's Herschel again, but at the same time, like a number of the bugs I found have become release blockers, and things like that, and that helps. So it's going to take iteration. I think like the success or failure on Canvas is going to be like how it feels. How intuitive is it? How it feels? How many paper cuts are there? We can deal with a couple paper cuts, but if there's too many paper cuts, it starts to get like really, really annoying. And on top of that, like how well developers can extend it. If I want to inject XYZ or something in there into the editorial interface, how easy can I do that?
Yeah,
But
that's actually a really good point and something that I wanted to talk about too. And I know we're getting close to time, but I want to still throw this in because one of the things about that when Gutenberg development started forced WordPress developers to learn was the fact that Gutenberg, the decision was made very early on to make it a React interface. And so that meant that not only did WordPress developers need to learn JavaScript, but they also needed to specifically learn React. And the learning curve, having played with React a little bit, I didn't, I mean, not before Gutenberg, obviously. Why would I? But having played with it since, I do like using React coming from like a PHP background because it makes a little bit more sense to my brain. But there's definitely a learning curve there. Talk about the developer experience for building things for Canvas, because as I understand it, it's not that same sort of like you need to learn a fundamentally different language anymore.
So like if I want to create a component that works in and outside of Canvas, it's the same as we're creating a component like outside of Canvas. So I mentioned that Drupal has this concept of direct components, which are called single directory components. And basically, like within your theme, you have a component directory, and within that component directory, you have a directory for every single component. And there's two mandatory files for your component. There's a twig file, which is like the markup language that Drupal uses. It's like standard HTML and then some curly brackets. You can put for loops and all that type of stuff in there. And then there's the component.yaml file. The component.yaml file will say, hey, this is a component, and then it'll also list type of data that that twig file is expecting. You know, so you say like, I'm going to have a title, it's going to be a string, and you know, you can call it, you know, title or something, you know, or you know, I'm going to have this, you know, portrait landscape checkbox, it's a Boolean, you know, I have an array, all this type of stuff, right? And so it describes what the twig files are expecting. And then you have a couple optional files. You can have a CSS file in there. You can have a JavaScript file in there. If it sees those, it'll automatically be loaded whenever the component is loaded. And you can also like put into the YAML file, you know, stuff for additional CSS files or, you know, dependencies on other type of, you know, stuff too, if you want. So at that point you have a directory, a single directory component. And as soon as Canvas sees that single directory component, it'll be available. Now, if something is screwed up in the YAML file, like let's say like you got your YAML indentation incorrect or something like that, what's kind of cool is you can go to like a little reports page, find your component in there, and it'll tell you exactly what's wrong with it, which is super nice from a development experience.
Yeah.
But once that component is there and it's working, like Drupal will know, hey, this is a string, so I'm going to put a, you know, a little text field in there, you know, and there's some other like stuff in your YAML you can add to say like, I want to load a rich text editor, you know, and there's some stuff in there that says this, you know, you can say this is an object and it's going to accept, you know, this is going to be an image. So that'll give you like a little widget to browse to an image, load into your media library and stuff like that, you know, and at that point it kind of, it's kind of works. So the development experience for creating components is pretty good. There's a couple rough edges, like a couple, and these are being worked on, you know, and I'm like, I'm totally on top of that. But even the rough edges have workarounds, you know, and like if you go to the Dripyard blog and stuff, I actually blog about this type of stuff because it's kind of fun, you know, it's fun to like solve these problems as I'm doing this, and you know, as far as the development experience of extending the actual editorial interface, that's a good question. Like, I haven't done that, you know? Dripyard's editorial interface is built within React. But that being said, like when Gutenberg was, you know, started, what was this, like probably like 5, 6, 7 years ago or something like that, React, a lot more people know React than they did back then. You know, like React is React was common back then, but it's much more common right now.
Right.
So like, I feel that people will be able to kind of jump in there and get into it. But that being said, like, you know, people have not yet because it's not technically stable right now. Like as of the time of this recording, it's a release can't like RC1 or RC2 or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's interesting, though, because, like, fundamentally, what I'm hearing is, like, if you want to build something that can be used by Canvas, you don't have to learn a completely different language, and I think that that's huge.
Yeah.
I think that that's a really big thing that Canvas has going for it, and like you said, like, even beyond that, the developer ecosystem today for people who know React or people who have encountered React is probably a lot broader and bigger than it was 5 or 6 years ago when we were talking about whether we were going to use React or Vue to put into to build Gutenberg on top of. So
yeah, absolutely.
So like just the ecosystem is different. Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on, Mike. I appreciate learning about Drupal and having an extremely nerdy conversation comparing CMSs. Where can people find you if they're looking for you online?
Oh, that's a good question. So my website is herschel.com, and that's spelled with a C, like there's no S's in there. So H-E-R-C-H-E-L.com. Dripyard.com is my company. If you're into Drupal, check out our blog and, you know, buy our stuff. I'm on like Blue Sky at mike.herschel.com, and I'm on Mastodon. I'm on like most of the things. Oh, on LinkedIn, I am Mike Herschel's disembodied head, and it has like my head floating right there. And people have like come up to me at conferences, like, you're a disembodied head. Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Disembodied Head.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mike, again for coming on and for everyone else for listening either now or in the future if you're coming across this episode at some distant point in the future. And until next time, we'll see you on the internet.
All right, bye, everybody.